I was thinking about, well, the Sabbath, why we're here. You know, from the beginning, the Creator planned to have a memorial of His method of creation. Not just the fact of creation, but His method of creation. It was to be a reminder and to be given for the happiness of mankind forever. We think about cycles that happen, you know, circadian rhythms. We have waking and sleeping cycles that are natural to us. We think, well, that's just been bred into us. And we think about the length of the day, 24 hours roughly, and our circadian rhythm. There was a study done at Harvard not too many years ago who they figured out that your circadian rhythm is pretty much for everybody, all the people that they studied. It's 24 hours and 11 minutes, plus or minus 16 minutes. So everybody's about the same. You know, you may be offset a few hours, like Ann. She likes to get up a little later and stay up a little later. Not me. I'm ready for bed, you know, when the sun goes down, pretty much. And 10 o'clock, I'm out. I'm done. But time. Circadian. Things go around in a circle. A roughly 24-hour biological, physiological thing happens to us. And as I was thinking about that, I found some interesting things. Estimating the time of death based on the biological clock was kind of interesting. You thought, well, okay, when you die, everything stops. Well, yeah, you may take your last breath, but every cell in your body doesn't stop working. And so up to even 72 hours, they can do some tests, and they've got all kinds of long names that you can't pronounce and initials and whatnot. But they can do tests and say, well, okay, they died, you know, within a couple hour time span, even up to 3 days. And I was thinking about that, you know, in Jesus, they said he was only going to be in the grave for what, 3 days? Not for 4 days. He would not see corruption in 4 days. And, you know, and here we can say, well, looky here, we can test DNA and whatnot, all this stuff, and we can estimate the time of death, you know, up to 72 hours. That's pushing it, but 48 hours better. But up to 72 hours, we can do that. Well, isn't that curious? The Bible is right. Even written how many hundreds of years ago? Something scientific. You know, we can learn things from the Bible. Imagine that. And I see, you know, working in healthcare, I see people die periodically. As, of course, I work night shift, so everybody for me dies, you know, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And that's, well, they've got some data here. From 4 to 6 o'clock in the morning, the line starts going up. And really the peak is from 6 to 8 o'clock in the morning. And then it goes back down. And then from 8 to 10, it's still pretty high. So from about 4 to 10 o'clock in the morning, and interestingly, our circadian rhythms take dips and dives in that same kind of a pattern. Your serum cortisol levels go down at that time of the day, you know, and you sleep the best. What, from 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning? It's when you're sleeping well. And that's for people that are not in the ICU, by the way. People that are in the ICU frequently die from heart attacks and things or whatever, you know, different things that are more acute, and so their time spans for death are a little bit different. But out of the ICU, people that have cancer and other, you know, terminal illnesses frequently die. Oh, here was something that was interesting. Estimating the time of death by the circadian rhythm. Researchers found that they could estimate a healthy person's time of death within a few hours by analyzing the activity levels of a set of genes within certain regions of the deceased brain. However, this correlation broke down when they analyzed the autopsied brains of people who had suffered from depression. How about that? The things that we think affect our physical being. Huh. Who would have thought? I was thinking about the time giver, too. Who's the time giver? Does the Bible give us any instruction in that? Daniel? Where in Daniel? Daniel 9. Daniel 9? Well, how about Daniel 8? You're close. Daniel 8, and there's a time prophecy given there. You may not have thought about this because we read English. We don't read the Hebrew. But there is a word there. And then that longest time prophecy in the Bible, that 2,300 years prophecy, Daniel 8:13. I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? Two individuals talking back and forth there. One saint says to another saint, I said unto that, okay, and hear that little phrase, that's certain, the word is Palmoni, the great numberer. Who is the great numberer, the wonderful numberer? Well, Jesus, in the creation, Genesis 1:14, he set things, seasons, times, the great numberer, the wonderful numberer, Jesus Christ. I was reading some other history. There was a, of course, we read this and say, well, okay, that comes down to particular dates. Reading some other history, and this person that was writing said, well, this began, this date, when did this begin? This date began here, this 2300 days. 457 B.C., how do we know that? Ezra 7, but Daniel 9, 20, is it 5? Daniel 9, 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, there was only one command to restore Jerusalem to its ability to manage itself. There were some other commands. Darius, Cyrus, had given commands to go back and build. But this restoration was something new from Artaxerxes. Go back and restore. And we have that, like you said, in Ezra 7, recorded for us when that was. And we know that was 457 B.C. Well, this other author, he said, well, no, this date began in 334, not 457, with the Battle of Alexander and all this kind of stuff. And it actually goes up to 1966. I thought, well, isn't that interesting? 334 to 1966, that's 2300. But you know, this author made the same fundamental mistake in counting chronology as did William Miller. He added in that, or subtracted, or whatever, that 0 year instead of going to 1967, like he should have. So it's a common, easily made mistake.
How does he fit Christ in
there? He doesn't. That's just it. Does that work? No, it doesn't work. Not according to Daniel 9. It doesn't work at all. He didn't say, but when you take it to 1967 and you apply the thoughts from futurism, what happened in 1967? Six-day war. So we could apply, or some do, I'm sure, apply 334 to 1967. Oh, that has relevance, but no relevance here according to chapter 9. So you have to throw that one out. The wonderful numberer knows. He knows today, tomorrow, the next day. Do I know what's going to happen tomorrow? No, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But the wonderful numberer, Palmoni, knows. People have often said, well, you know, okay, we know how long a day is. That's 24 hours, more or less. We know how long a month is. It's 28 days, more or less. We know how long a year is, 365 days, more or less. But a week? Nah, that's just pulled out of thin air. Where does the 7-day week come from? We're going to have a 10-day week. You remember attempts to change the calendar. 10-day week, well, that didn't work out very well because we're not built for that. The wonderful numberer says you need to go on a 7-day cycle. And so we have circa septan cycles every 7 days. You think, well, what could that be? Well, I don't know. Let's see here. Is it just people? Well, no. They've demonstrated that even algae, rats, mice, honeybees, beach beetles, face flies have 7-day cycles that they function in. The common cold is a circa septan cycle. It runs for about 7 days. Pneumonia. Now today, you know, with all the aerosol treatments and everything we give people, we say, oh, okay, we can fix that in 3 days. Well, yeah, but if it's untreated, pneumonia, it'll either kill you or cure you. 7 days. What about your teeth? Have you ever thought about your teeth? What do they tell you about a 7-day cycle? That's what I thought. Not a clue. Your teeth, as they are developing, and this goes back even to, well, you remember Lucy that they dug up, you know, that bones, whatever, the skull, Australopithecus something or other, Africanus. They looked at her teeth and said, well, isn't that interesting? There are ridges in your teeth. And as the enamel forms, when you're just this big or this big, the enamel forms in your teeth. You have lines that go this way and lines that go this way. Well, one direction or the other, there's a 7-day cycle in the development of the enamel. So your enamel, your teeth develop, 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 and they work hard, and on the seventh day they rest. Curious. God built us, the great, wonderful numberer built us around a seven-day cycle. And you can say, well, 7 days, a seven-day week, that's arbitrary. No, not so much. We are made for a seven-day cycle. We are made to rest every 7 days. What about the eighth day? You ever heard of people worshiping on the eighth day?
Yeah, it's Gnosticism.
Well, Gnosticism, yeah. What about, talking about eighth day, what about circumcision? Why do they circumcise on the eighth day? Blood clotting factors, yeah, I've heard that. I think there's something else to it. Why was circumcision initiated? The rite of circumcision initiated?
Sin.
Because of sin. Rebellion. You remember Abraham. God said, you're going to have a son. This is Genesis 17, if you want to look over there. God said, you're going to have a son. And Abraham said, great. It's wonderful. Years went by. And Abraham says, how's this going to happen? God says, you're going to have a son. And Abraham thought, well, I don't know. It's been a long time. My wife's getting old. And Sarah came and said, you know, you can use my handmaid. And so they had a son. And Abraham said, certainly this is the son of promise. God says, no. That's not the son of promise. Ishmael's not the son of promise. And there's going to be a sign given to you that this is not the way to do things. You're going to have to cut a little piece of flesh. And so every time Abraham could look down and say, ah, that's not the promise of a son. That's the working of my own hand to fulfill the promise of God. Circumcision on the eighth day is a sign of righteousness by works. God says, don't do that. Eighth day worship, first day worship, don't do that. It's a sign of righteousness by works. Don't do that. So, Sabbath has a direct impact on our health. You know, I wonder about that. You know, as Seventh-day Adventists, there have been a lot of studies done. And some of you may be participating in that Adventist health survey thing. It's been going on for 30 years, I guess. We participate in it. They send us a little survey every now and again. And, you know, how many eggs have you eaten this week kind of thing. But I wonder if it's more than that. It's, you know, because the studies that have been done show that Seventh-day Adventists live 7 to 10 years longer than the average American. Why is that? It could be because we're simply living in sync with God's plan for humanity. Taking that rest every Sabbath. Resting on the Sabbath. In sync with the rhythm of life. Did God need 7 days to create the world? He could have snapped his fingers, and everything could have been done instantly. Could have accomplished it all in a moment, in an instant. But he did not. He might have prolonged the creative event for a month. But he didn't. He deliberately planned to do it by stages. Spread out over 7 days, 6 days of work, 1 day of rest, as a memorial of what he had done and how he had done it. Not just what he had done, but how he had done it. Then he put a perpetual blessing on every succeeding seventh holy day for us in memory of his own resting and ceasing from even divine activity of the work of creation. The Bible tells us in Psalm 33, and this is a text you could probably quote a couple of verses, Psalm 33:6, how God created. It says in verse 6, Psalm 33:6, by the breath of his mouth were the heavens made. And in verse 9, he spake, and it was. He commanded, and it stood fast. And then in Colossians, chapter 1, there's nothing made that is made except by, well, and there it says that Jesus was actually the active one in the creation. I forget what verse that is, 15 or something. So the Sabbath. What do we do on the Sabbath? Is it a day of, well, going out and playing football and whatnot? Well, no. It's a day of rest. Do we just go home and take a nap then? Well, sometimes. I'm just whipped, you know, at the end of the week. You know, and that afternoon nap, boy, that's good. But God had a plan for us. The children of Israel, the Bible teaches us, that they had forgotten about the Sabbath, about Sabbath keeping. They'd been in, where were they? They're in Egyptian bondage, but that's not where they began. They began free, and after a period of about 400 years, they were in a mess. And over a period of time, they said, the Egyptian way of life, maybe it's not so bad. And they had forgotten the Sabbath had been kind of beaten out of their lives. And so God said, when you leave Egypt, you're going to have to learn some things. Before you get to Mount Sinai, you're going to have to learn some things. So the Sabbath, sometimes people say, the Sabbath was just given there at Sinai. It was given to the Jews. Is that what it is? Let's look. Exodus chapter, I don't know, where would we go? Sometime before Sinai, I'd say. Exodus chapter 16. And God said, I'm going to help you learn something about the Sabbath. The people said, what are we going to eat while we're out here in this deserted place? What are we going to eat? God says, not a problem. Every morning, I want you to go out and on the bushes, on the shrubs, everywhere, pick this little thing and you're going to eat it. You're going to make your bread out of it. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And they said, oh, great. 5 days out of the week, you'll pick up your day's portion. If you collect more than your day's portion, it will spoil overnight. It'll be rancid. It'll have bugs in it. It won't be edible. 5 days out of the week. On the sixth day, on the preparation day, pick up two portions. Some for today, some for tomorrow. Prepare for the Sabbath. He said, don't be going out grocery shopping on the Sabbath. Do your grocery shopping on the day of preparation. Make sense? How about us today? Same idea. Prepare for the Sabbath. Does that mean you have to shop on Friday? No. Shop on Thursday. Shop on Wednesday. But be prepared for the Sabbath. Manna. Preparation for the Sabbath. Well, turn over a couple of pages. And we find in Exodus chapter 20... that God says, you've been learning. Since you left Egypt, you've been learning. Now, he says, since you've learned something, don't forget it. In verse 8, the first word. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days, you do your grocery shopping. But on the seventh day, you rest. In it, he says, thou shalt not do any work. In verse 9, the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. Thou, don't tell your son to go out and cut the grass. Say, it's not me. It's his problem, not mine. Your son. Or your daughter. Or your manservant. Who's your manservant? Whoever you hire to do work for you. Don't do that. Manservant, your maidservant, same idea. When we travel, we sometimes travel over the Sabbath. We don't generally travel. We try to arrange it so that we're in one place. And then we go to church and whatever, and check ahead, make arrangements for worship on Sabbath, if it's available. There are Adventist churches all over the country. So if you travel, find one before you go. Say, that's where we're going to go to church. We went to Washington, D.C. Just online, we picked a church. So, it's close. It's half a mile from where we're in our hotel, so we can go over there. It was a black church, which is neither here nor there either. Wonderful people, but very active. Their service was a bit more active than ours here today. A bit. Pastor walking up down the aisle, as he's preaching, and it was boisterous. The little praise band or whatever it was up here, they were playing something all the time, constant. But, again, that aside, wonderful people. It was a good place to worship. And the lunch, they invited us to lunch, potluck, dinner after that, and we stayed. And wonderful day. Keeping the Sabbath holy. You make plans to keep the Sabbath. You plan ahead. And actually, when we travel, we hang do not disturb sign on the door on the Sabbath. So your maidservant, who's your maidservant? Whoever comes in and cleans your room. Get your extra towels the day before. Go to some place. Get something to eat. If you don't have, lunch plans where that church was, make plans. There's a refrigerator in your room. Make plans for the Sabbath. keep the Sabbath holy. Not your maidservant, nor your manservant, your maidservant, nor your cattle. We used to ride horses. We didn't work a horse on the Sabbath. We thought, well, that's a nice relaxing thing for us to do. Well, not for the horse. So he said, maybe we shouldn't be riding our horses on the Sabbath. You know, not your cattle or your stranger that's within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Make plans for Sabbath keeping all week. That's every day of the week points forward. Actually, all the days of the week are numbered, aren't they? Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, day... Well, there is no day 7. It's the Sabbath. All the days point forward to the Sabbath. Prepare for that. How long is the Sabbath supposed to be good for? Well, turn over in Exodus just a few more pages. Exodus 31. Verse 12. And what does it do for us? You say, well, it's just another day. Beginning with verse 12, there, Exodus 31:12, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbath ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you. How long? Forever. That ye may know something. There's something involved in Sabbath keeping that's bigger than a day. It's a reminder that it is God who sanctifies us. You can't get that from any other day. You can worship on Tuesday if you want to. It does not carry this blessing. That day does not. It does not carry with it the reminder of our sanctification. If we will give ourselves to God's service. And last week, Tori mentioned a word, a little word, three letters, let. Let the mind of Christ be in us. We read let here and there frequently. But if we will give ourselves to God's service, the grace of Christ is a transforming power. It changes us. This reminder of sanctification is an important reminder. It transforms us into true Christians. You say, oh, it's just another day. It's more than a day, far more than a day. It's a reminder to us who is doing the work in us to clean us up. The reason we have true religion is so that God can give us everything that is beneficial to man. God prohibited work on the Sabbath to point us to Christ and the work of redemption, which is complete in Christ. Remember the story there in Genesis chapter 2. It says that God completed his work, which he had made, and then he rested. The Sabbath is a weekly reminder of God's finished work in Christ and the work that he's doing in us. You remember, the first full day that man spent on this earth was a Sabbath. It was a day of rest. It was not a day of work. It was a day of rest. That's an important distinction. There are many who say that the Sabbath has been done away. It was nailed to the cross. Christians are no longer under the obligation to keep the Sabbath, to remember the Sabbath, to keep it holy. So I thought what we could do is look at Hebrews chapter, 4 is where you think about the Sabbath, but chapter 3, let's get a little bit of history. We've been talking about some history here this morning about the children of Israel. Hebrews chapter 3 tells us a bit about their experience. Let's begin Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7, I suppose. Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. And this is a quote from Psalm 95. The Holy Ghost said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness. And that's Exodus, a reference to Exodus 17. When your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years, whereof I was grieved with that generation, and said, they do always err in their heart. They've not known my ways, so I swear in my wrath that they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, and this is word to us. Take heed, brethren, lest there be any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. We have the example given to us. Take heed, lest there be in you a heart of unbelief. But exhort one another, encourage one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin? For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end, while it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. And that is a direct reference to the experience at Kadesh Barnea, if you want to do a little study there. For some, when they had heard, did provoke, howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness, and to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. We go on here, counsel to us. Let us therefore fear, while the promise of entering into his rest remains, lest some amongst you find they are prevented from entering, or seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as to who? Certainly not. That's old law stuff. They didn't hear the gospel. Well, talk to the Apostle Paul about that. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached, well, there was a problem. Did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. And I think about that text, ever learning, but never coming to a knowledge of truth. There's something to that. We can learn all about the Sabbath. We can learn all about the, well, what the Pharisees did. Long list of do's and don'ts, had it all figured out. Not mixed with faith, there was a problem. We which have believed do enter into rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. It is finished? For he spake in a certain place on the seventh day in this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limited a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. For if Joshua, the son of Nun, and that's, it says here in the King James, for of Jesus, but actually in the Greek, the word is Jesus, which could also be translated Joshua, and Joshua is the contextually the correct one here. For if Joshua, the son of Nun, had given them rest, he would not afterward have spoken of another day. And I think George Lamza here has got it correct in his translation. Verse 9, he says, it is therefore the duty of the people of God to keep the Sabbath. Now there are two different words here for rest. In verse 9 there it says, there remaineth therefore rest to the people of God. Well, throughout here in chapter 4, in those beginning verses, katapausen is used, which is a, well, just relax, sit back, take it easy kind of rest. In verse 9, the rest that is there, there remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. The author here uses a word, sabbatismos. There is a Sabbath rest to the people of God. There's something special about this rest as we enter into the rest of God. For he that entereth into his rest, into his katapausis, he also hath ceased from his own works as God did from his. Circumcision on the eighth day. Laying aside, well, what does it say? Oh, well, here in Hebrews again, laying aside every weight that besets us, isn't it? Laying aside our efforts to save ourselves and realize that we are sanctified only by the blood of Christ. And that the Sabbath is given to us as a sign, as the seal of righteousness that comes only by faith. Entering into the rest of God involves worshiping on the Sabbath, on the seventh day of the week. He who has entered into his rest also has ceased from his own works, as God did from his, there in Genesis chapter 2, verse 3. The writer here in Hebrews exhorts us then, in verse 11, let us labor, therefore, strive to enter into that rest, lest any man fall like those who were disobedient. For the word of God is living and powerful and strong as a two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. I think about that text that we looked at there in the book of Daniel. We didn't actually read verse 14, but 13. The great, wonderful numberer who gave an answer. How long is this going to last? And the wonderful numberer says, under 2,300 days, something is going to happen. The sanctuary will be cleansed. God is working in each of us to clean us up. The sanctuary of our heart is being cleansed. The sanctuary in heaven where Christ is working. Well, if you continue reading Hebrews here, Christ is working as our high priest in the sanctuary in heaven to clean us up, to say, you really don't want to sin anymore, and it's going to be our choice to say, you're right. I really don't like this sin business anymore. We see that when we sin, well, it says in another place, we crucify the Son of God afresh and expose Him to open shame. We'll say, I'm done with that. I would rather be clean. I would rather enter into the rest of God and be sanctified. On the Sabbath, people with kids, I see a bunch of them sitting back there on the back row. Parents should give all the time that you can to your children and make it a happy day for them and for you. Spend extra time with them that you don't have time to do all the rest of the week. And this is for us old fogies too. Is to spend quiet time maybe together. Spend time that, you know, the quality time that you talk about. Don't leave your children to go out and get into mischief. Spend quality time with them. When the weather's nice, go out and, you know, get one of those Peterson's books of flowers and trees and birds and whatnot. Do some nature identification. Look at what God has made and say, ah, isn't that neat? A wonderful thing. Appreciate what God has done for us. Truth Sabbath keeping will mold our characters and transform us into the overcomers that Christ guarantees His people will be. Entering into rest, there were some who could not enter rest because of what? Unbelief. But God says, no, there remaineth a rest to the people of God. There remains a keeping of the Sabbath for the people of God. Hebrews, reading on here, chapter 13, 4:13, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in His sight. All things are naked and opened unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. He's cleaning us up, folks. All things are open to the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are. Yet He never sinned. Let us, therefore, come boldly unto the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Sabbath keeping protects us from, well, let's say Darwinism even, evolution, from those ideas. You know, I mentioned Lucy, and those striae of Rhodesia in her teeth. Was she here 50 million years ago? No. Sabbath keeping protects us from thinking that way. Remember is placed at the very first of the four commandments. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It's a day when hands are to rest from worldly tasks and a reminder to us that we need to rest from our worldly attempts to save ourselves. When in the end God declares, here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus, He will be pointing directly at a group of people who have not failed the test, who have believed. There will be a group of people who are true Sabbath keepers, who have learned what it means to enter into His rest.